On the Book Show with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
Today we're going to talk about a very difficult subject, something that is very upsetting, something that is frankly horrifying. We're going to talk about sex trafficking in America. People have all sorts of wrong ideas about how sex trafficking works. And one of the things that I learned a number of years ago was that there are more people who are enslaved now than there were back in the what we might say were the traditional days of enslavement in America and in the New World. Because there are so many more people now, and because it's easier in a lot of ways. And you can make more money as a criminal enslaving people for sex, because you can only sell a drug once, but you can sell a person time and time again. That is the horrifying truth. And here to talk to us about it is a man who has made it his business to be informed about these things. He's got a brand new book entitled It's Not About the Sex: True Stories of Human Trafficking from a Law Enforcement Officer, a Survivor, a Brothel Madam, and an Advocate. It's from itisnotabout.com. That's the publisher. And we are proud to welcome, for his first visit to On the Bookshelf, John DiGirolamo. Thank you, John, for joining us today on the bookshelf to talk about this very, very serious problem in America, and because I know it's not easy to talk about.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
How long have you been working in this field, investigating and trying to figure? According to your bio, you've been an anti-human trafficker, traffic advocate for some time. How long have you been gathering stories?
Yeah, it's really been about a year and a half where I really started to start interviewing people about it, wanting to give survivors, advocates, law enforcement, et cetera, a voice. And you know, one of the things that's unique is I've got these different perspectives all in one book, and I think it really kind of shows a complete picture.
One of the things that makes the book very compelling is that you have these different sides of it. The first portion that I read was really the story of Janelle Goodrich, who has a ministry and an advocacy called From Silenced to Saved, correct? That's a woman who graduated with a theology degree and was doing some counseling. What she ran into, apparently, was a girl who was very, very angry about something.
Yeah, she was very defiant, very angry, and the parents, you know, couldn't figure out what was going on. And Janelle, after, you know, talking with this young lady multiple times, you know, kind of drew it out of her of what actually she had been through.
We have some very alarming statistics about sex trafficking in America. We tend to think of people who are in prostitution as being grown women or grown men who made the decision to go into that profession, but that is a fallacy.
It's not like the movie Pretty Woman, where you've got, it's a very, almost romanticized Hollywood version. Mm-hmm. And what I was focusing on was underage, and that's always a crime, and you can never give consent for commercial sex as an underage person. And a lot of people think that they're snatched off the street and it's a kidnapping situation, and that's really only 3-5%. And there's definitely vulnerability categories, but one of the ones, and this was in Janelle's story, was about, a teenage girl who's still living at home, still going to high school, and doesn't seem to be that person who's at great risk, and yet they get recruited by what's called a Romeo pimp, which, as that name implies, is this older boyfriend looking to manipulate somebody and then exploit them.
57% of sex trafficking victims are under the age of 18. Is one of the statistics that's in the book. They're looking for girls particularly who are lonely or difficult situations at home because they're a little more vulnerable, right?
Yeah, a predator always wants an easy target. That's going to come through some kind of unmet need, whether that's material, emotional, financial, psychological, etc. And that's a predator tactic to exploit them. Now, there's all kinds of bad outcomes that could happen with that, anywhere from, you know, sexting, you know, blackmail, getting pictures for child pornography. But human trafficking is kind of the bullseye. It's really kind of the worst situation, because somebody is traumatized not just once, but it's every day, multiple times a day. So it really has that, you know, emotional, psychological toll, rather than just, you know, one traumatic event.
And I think it's important for us to remind our listeners that there would be no business in sex trafficking if primarily men didn't want to pay to pretend that they're on a date with a person who is much younger than them and who likes them. And I think that is the most reprehensible thing of all. It's not that these guys who entrap these girls and convince them that they don't have any alternative but to perform sexual acts for money. It's not as though they have a lot of trouble finding men who want to have sex with these girls. And that's as disturbing a fact as the idea that there would be men who would take vulnerable girls and betray their confidence, betray their affection, and betray their hurt and their anger, and turn them into objects.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the other side of the criminal element that a lot of people don't talk about. And the problem with the sex buyer or that demand side is they look like a very average person. They're typically married, employed, 30 to 50 years old, and it cuts across all different, you know, racial, social, economic boundaries. And so, you know, they just don't look like, you know, this strange guy, you know, at the end of the street who you know, shoo your kids away from. They, you know, they're going to work every day. They have a wife and kids at home. And one of the things that feeds into that we're seeing is, you know, the explosion of pornography, especially over the internet, over the last several decades. And it feeds that fantasy of having some kind of sexual relation with a teenager, and we're seeing that play out in human trafficking as that fantasy becomes reality.
It amazes me, and there's one story that's even more horrifying, and that was about Angela, who has her own book coming out that you mentioned in your book. She was 5 years old when she was sold by her grandfather, who had come from an abusive family and who was abused when he was a child. So apparently he just thought it was a normal thing. And they got into a so-called club of other guys who liked the idea of having sex with a child because they are so clean and virginal, because, of course, they would be virgins at the age of 5 years old.
Yeah, you know, familial trafficking is one of the things that a lot of people don't like to talk about, but it happens a lot more often than people think. And, you know, what's important about Angela's story is she's in her 50s now, so this is not something new. This happened to her back in the 70s. And, you know, her story isn't so much about, you know, what her grandfather did with her, but it's the decades of her healing and recovery story. And, you know, how do you survive and persevere in the face of adversity? How does somebody go through everything she did and have the wherewithal to talk to me, a total stranger, and tell her story all about that, knowing it's going to get published? And, you know, all the things she tried that did work, that didn't work, and how at the end she doesn't want to be viewed just as a victim through that lens. She wants to be known not only as a survivor, but somebody who you can celebrate, you know, her life, living, laughing, loving, etc., just like, you know, any other person out there. And, you know, she did a lot of journaling and diary as part of her healing process. And so you really get to know her as a person because I've taken some of those diary entries, and you can really see what she was going through at that particular time. And, you know, it's not something that ever goes away, but you get to the point where you can manage your life much better. And I think it's very inspirational for people to kind of see her journey from something that was so bad into something where, you know, if you met her today, you probably wouldn't even know what happened to her.
We want to hear more about Angela's story, which is, and about how she survived, how she has overcome, and how long the journey was for her. But first, I want to remind people, in case you're joining us late, we're talking about a very serious subject today. The book is It's Not About the Sex: True Stories of Human Trafficking from a Law Enforcement Officer, a Survivor, a Brothel Madam, and an Advocate. And that advocate is our author today, who is John Gigirolamo. And John had published this book himself. You can find out more about it at his website, www.itisnotabout.com. If you've ever wondered how people are enticed into the sex trade, or you think that it's a voluntary thing, you'll be horrified to discover that that's not the case at all, and that those who survive it, and not all do. One of the things that I learned in reading your book is that the average age of entry into sex trafficking is 12 to 14 years old for girls, 11 to 13 for boys, and the life expectancy of a human trafficking victim is 7 years. And indeed, one of the awful stories that's in your book, the awful true story about a pair of grown men who are running a mother and her daughter. And one of them entices the mother to feel romantic attachments to him, and then in an instant flips a switch and becomes that it's not about sex, it's all about money. And it's all about money, not for the people that are being trafficked. It's all about money for the people that are the traffickers. And they are brutal and vicious. They murder one of the other girls that they have trafficked in front of them and leave her body to bleed out on the one mattress that they have in the room in which they are locked. These are extraordinary, vicious, evil people. It's got to be difficult. I know the book that you wrote before this one was It's Not About the Badge, Real Cops, Real Stories, Join Their Journey. So I would think in researching that book that you began the genesis of this book as well, because there are some stories in here from people in law enforcement who are trying to catch these guys.
Yeah, you know, I when I interviewed the police officers, I would essentially start out with asking about a day on the job that they would never forget. And I got a really wide variety of stories, and it really showed why was that an important day for them, even though if you read the police report, it would look rather routine. And typically at the end of the interview, I would ask, you know, just different questions. What's your favorite song? What's your favorite movie? What would you do if you won the lottery? And one of the guys stopped and stared at me and said, I'd quit my job and I would hunt down human traffickers. And it was in that moment that I knew that this is where I had to go next.
Wow. There are a lot of stories in here about people who come from families that go to church. I mean, some of the families that they come from are broken and battered, but there are also those that come from church-going families, and they have some idea of love and God, and yet they are coerced into doing something that they normally would never consider doing, and then they're stuck, and then they're threatened with exposure. Oh, yeah, well, I have a picture of you doing that, and if you think you can leave me, I'll just email this to your parents or email this to the police or on and on and on. I can understand why the person you interviewed would say, I would hunt down these guys, because they seem to be the vermin of how often are police able to capture these guys?
Yeah, so when I interviewed the law enforcement officer in the Denver metro area, he said that they work on about 100 cases a year, and he estimated there was about 1,000 cases that they could work on. So that means they're only working on 10%. And, you know, Denver's not the biggest city in this country. And so, a lot of these guys are just under the radar, operating under the radar because of the resources that it takes and just trying to track them down and build a case. And with technology, a lot of these criminals can use burner phones. They can set up profile, take down profile instantly, and just kind of disappear.
Of all the cases that you investigated, all the people that you interviewed, which were the ones that were the most disturbing to you? Was it Angela, who was taken into this, who was sold by her family into the trade when she was just a child? I mean, that's pretty rough.
Kind of have the different chapters for, I would say, a different reason for what it reveals, kind of how it profiles. Certainly interviewing the law enforcement officer was disturbing because, that's what they do, day and night, and the type of people that they have to deal with. And, these pimps out there, they can be kind of one of two tactics. They can be a Romeo, which, as the name implies, they try to set up a boyfriend relationship. It's coerced over time. They use a lot of psychological manipulation. And then the gorilla pimp is just that violent, immediate intimidation. That's the kind of person who, again, is going to discard someone's life without really a whole lot of thought. And they're going to make threats, and they're going to go through with those threats. And unfortunately, that happens all too often. And once somebody, especially if they're underage, if they're psychologically broken, when you see that kind of violence, when you've been through traumatic experiences, it doesn't take that long to break somebody. It's typically a week or two.
One of the stories that's in here is about a woman who is a youth director at church, and she is raped in the parking lot of a motel, and later she sees her rapist, and he's getting a job there, and acting like they know each other and like they're friends with each other, and this really shatters her even more than she's already been shattered. Can you tell us a little bit about her story?
Yeah, so that's Jessica, and the tagline is this brothel madam's tale of redemption, but there's more than that, just one component. And when I first heard about Jessica's story and heard that she was raped as an adult, then decides to be an escort girl, then goes into pornography, then becomes a brothel madam, and I kept asking myself, how does somebody make that decision? How are you sitting there as an escort girl and think, hey, this is a great idea. Let's go to LA and do pornography. And I had many, many conversations, many hours of interviewing to really get inside of her head in that decision-making process. And that's why I decided to do her story from the first person point of view, as if it's you and her sitting down in the living room, having a conversation, and she's literally telling you, the reader, her story. And so you go through her relationship with God and how she was, very angry with God. And as she talks about, going to the bottom of the sin barrel, and then sometimes you have to hit rock bottom before you start coming back out. And her story is really fascinating in the sense, from a story perspective, of how she, goes through these, decades worth of bad decisions, and how she finally comes out of it, on the other side. Now, in, years later, she is an anti-pornography advocate. She'll go to lawmakers to you know, try to get them to strengthen laws against pornography, you know, is kind of active in that area. It also gives a little bit of insight of, you know, what goes on in the pornography business and how that really feeds into, you know, the fantasy of having sex with somebody underage, and how you've really, you know, taken sex out of the context of love and marriage and put it into this, you know, body object type of situation.
When you divorce something that was designed for good and just have it as an object into itself, no matter what it is, you are setting people up for heartbreak and loss. But this is particularly egregious, isn't it? Because this is such a deep wound. It is really astonishing reading the stories of these women who have gone through this kind of horrible trauma and who have found their way out. And some of them found their way out because they found their way to God or back to God. And others, we just get the feeling that there have been kind people that have helped them along the way. What do you see as the common thread with all the people that you interviewed who had become survivors of the sex traffic?
Yeah, it really boils down to an internal fortitude, because if you think about what they've been through and the statistics on those experiences, you get a much higher depression rate, you get a much higher addiction rate, you get a much higher suicide rate, and any of those things are going to lead to, you know, a life of misery, and the fact that they're here to tell their story shows that they had some fortitude of will to not fall into those traps, and maybe they were there for a little while with you know, drinking and drugs and that kind of thing, but they still were able to get themselves out of that situation. And, you know, in Jessica's case, she only could do that because of her reconnection with Christ.
These stories are amazing. The information is so important. I think that we probably should take a few minutes before we run out of time and talk about things that people can do to help, to be aware of what can happen, and what can we do if we see a situation that seems suspicious to us.
Sure. So there's definitely some, I would say, warning signs that someone is being groomed. If you see a teenager that has a second cell phone or has unexplained gifts such as jewelry, clothes, has an older boyfriend, secrecy about new friends, online friends, etc., you know, gets into drugs and alcohol, that's the time to start, you know, asking questions. For parents, you know, they need to really monitor what's going on with their kids and their teenagers, because there's lots of predators online, and, you know, your kid might not be looking for trouble, but trouble is definitely looking for them. And, you know, one of the storylines was a girl who was groomed kind of through an online private message chat capability, and that kind of thing, you know, happens all the time. So parents really need to be on top of those things. There are parental software programs to kind of help monitor that stuff, but they really have to be a active parent. And as far as what people can do, there's every county in this country has some kind of nonprofit that is an anti-human trafficking advocate. They can get involved, not just monetarily, but they can help out in a host of other ways. Because if you imagine, you know, somebody who's been in this situation, especially as a teenager, you know, getting out of that situation, and, you know, maybe they need to still get their high school diploma, they may need job skills, you know, even how to write a resume, all kinds of things like that. They're going to need transitional housing, and I would encourage people to, you know, to contact their local nonprofits and see what they can do to help.
John, it is a stunning revelation. Even though I've read other books before and talked to other people that were counselors and so forth, you would think over time that it would get better, but it does not seem to, because the same old tricks still work. The way that they're approached, if people who are runaways, children who are runaways, are particularly vulnerable, if they run to a city of any size and they're living on the streets, the majority are approached by pimps or drug dealers within 48 hours of landing on the streets. And I can't emphasize enough, too, that 67% of the men who buy these girls are white middle-aged men. And so if when people are arrested for soliciting prostitutes, if their names would be put in the newspaper, that might be somewhat of a discourager to these kind of people who think that this crime isn't really a crime and nobody knows because it's something personal. We need to make sure that people know that it is a crime and it is not about the sex.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, yeah, the demand side is something that people aren't talking about, and they're not the ones getting long sentences, you know, typically the trafficker, because it's multiple occurrences. But yeah, the demand side, that person who's going out and buying these kids is just, you know, to me, one of the most evil things you can do to somebody else. And you know, and that's why I wrote the book, you know, tried not to be salacious, graphic, or sensationalize it, but to give an accurate picture.
Well, John, I think you did a really excellent job with that. You teach us everything that we need to hear without being disgusting or salacious at all. But you are honest, and that's what people need to realize, that this is not just a dating service or something, that these are enslaved people. And we need to be aware of what dangers are out there. And we need to look around our neighborhoods and see if there's situations where a lot of very underfed teenagers are living, it seems to be, in a big house and so forth. So your book contains all those sorts of things and warnings. And it's just going to be a great resource, I think. And people can find it on Amazon.com, right?
Yeah, the print copy as well as an audio and Kindle version is on Amazon. I thought the audio version came out really well. So if you like that way of reading a book, I think it's a great choice. And they can get a signed copy from my website, which is www.itisnotabout.com.
John, thank you so much. It's an absolutely fascinating and horrifying book, but I think it's full of information that people need to know. We need to be aware, and we need to stand up and be advocates for these children who are being brutalized and sold time and time again, numerous times in a single day. It should be horrifying to us, and we need to do something about it. And as a Christian myself, I think that we in the church need to be aware and need to look for opportunities to rescue people as well.
You cannot solve a problem unless you're aware of it and, you know, get passionate about looking for solutions. And this is the start of being aware of what's going on kind of in all of our neighborhoods, not just big cities or the border, but it's happening in small town, suburban America.
John DiGirolamo, our guest today, his new book, It's Not About the Sex, True Stories of Human Trafficking from a Law Enforcement Officer, a Survivor, a Brothel Madam, and an Advocate. It's published by itsnotabout.com. Check out their website and also look on Amazon to get the book in paperback, in hardcover, coming in Kindle in Kindle and in audiobook, available now. John, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today on the Bookshelf.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great conversation, and really appreciate the time.
I'm your host, Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.